again?
Staples.
Staples, right. Okay.
Right in the middle of the map.
How are you doing?
Okay.
How's the weather?
Cooling off. Cooling off. All the leaves are dropping and...
Okay. Well, nice country, but this time of the year, I'm glad I'm out here.
Yeah. I think most of my students wish they were, too. Fair weather fans.
Yes.
What I have here, like last year, is I have a group of students who are involved in classical war and peace, and we just study conflict and how to resolve it using methods of peace and or war, however one wants to perceive that.
Yes.
Anyway, we come across a couple of sources, either reading or video sources, in which you're in there. So students know your name and face a little bit, and since we've been doing this a number of years, they're generally interested in talking with you and how Tom Metzger became Tom Metzger of today.
Well, I'm glad to be talking to you and your students.
Okay. So like we do in the years past, would you mind just kind of tracing back how you became you and some of the organizations and things that you're joined with and some of the things that you would like to broadcast to these students?
Just a brief update, you mean?
Sure. Again, these would be new students to your message.
All right. Well, I started out in Indiana, where I was born and raised and served in the military and came to California in the process of working for Douglas Aircraft in Santa Monica, California. I became involved with anti-communist activities during the early 60s. Gradually evolved into a political activist working on the Goldwater campaign against Johnson in 64. At the end of that campaign, I became involved with the John Birch Society. I was involved with the John Birch Society for several years as a local chapter leader. Gradually became involved in the American Independent Party and became quite interested in the money mechanics and what banking was all about. Studied a lot on economics. Evolved into study of race, anthropology, a certain amount, and a lot of historical things. Evolved through an idea called Christian identity, which today I reject. Then I evolved into a leader in the KKK with David Duke from Louisiana, and in the mid to late 70s, I formed my own organization in California, ran for Congress in 1980, and won the Democratic nomination, ran for Senate in U.S. Senate in 82, and evolved in 1980 from the Klan into the White American Political Association, then into White Aryan Resistance. And where I'm at today is very simple, is struggling for the best interests in the future of white Euro-American people in North America, and for that matter around the world, based on the fact that we are a diminishing minority worldwide. Our entire thrust is based upon that particular premise. We do not evaluate along religious lines. I'm not religious anymore. We do have people who are religious that are associated with us, but we have agnostics, atheists, Christians, and leftists and rightists, and people from all walks of life who associate with us. We're not a membership organization. We're not an oath-taking organization. We have very few scheduled meetings. We have no marches, but we attempt to infiltrate, if you will, society to promote our ideas with whatever talents we have.
Could you fill us in on some of the specific ideas that you've come through all these years? What exactly would you like these students to be exposed to your ideas?
Well, what I'd like for them to understand is that based upon the present trends of exporting massive amounts of industry to other nations and at the same time importing massive amounts of third world people into the United States, many of these people are not assimilable peoples, bringing tremendously different cultures, religions, and so forth, and races into the country, and a tremendous birth rate. that we're heading towards a balkanizing of the United States or North America into different racial areas. And, of course, this is not some new idea by Tom Metzger. Many demographers who are well-respected are talking about this. And they have spent billions of dollars attempting to encourage people to integrate, miscegenate between the races in this country. It has worked to a degree, but still, for the most part, whites are moving into white areas. The mestizos of Central South America are moving into their areas more in the Southwest, and black race tends still to congregate in areas where they have been predominant in the past. And so what you're looking towards, what I say, due to the economic exploitation of the whole idea that is around today, that we are being moved closer and closer to a type of a civil war in this country. And it will be caused by economics, but it will become racial. And when that happens, there will be a dividing up of this country and like that. So if you can do anything to convince people to move us away from this position, you would be doing us a service. If you just continue in the PC mold, it will happen, and it's going to be very terrible, much worse than even the American Civil War.
I'm trying to invite in student questions at any point so I don't dominate this. What are the goals of white Aryan resistance?
The goals of white Aryan resistance are simply to make a leadership cadre, or people who will come out of the public and become leaders around North America, aware of the fact, the danger that we face as a people, and that we need to move more and more towards racial separation to protect our gene pool, and that they should use their talents in whatever way they can, no matter what occupation or profession they're in, to cause that to happen. We operate as mostly as individuals in small cells. And we recommend people, no matter what profession, whether it be in the military, whether it would be in any political position or just working class position, whatever the position they're in, to be an advocate of the best interests of our race.
You said that about the Civil War possibly in the future. Does that mean like another goal of your group, our organization, might be to save America?
Well, saving America. America, as we have known, it cannot be saved, faced with the total treasonous activity of the leaders in Washington and their economic masters. We can't go back to anything. We have to go forward. But in the meantime, we're going to have to decide whether the United States is going to sink into a banana republic, as the economic interests would like for it to do, whether we're going to split the country and have racial determination in various areas. Are we going to struggle to maintain the entire North American continent for a Euro-American homeland? Just exactly what we're going to do. And, of course, beyond that, what is possible and practical, and not just what we would like to fantasize. At this point, we can't see any possibility of retrieving the entire North American continent for the white race.
Do you promote violence at all?
As a necessity, of course I would. Faced with extinction, with oppression, and the other factors that they will throw against our desires, we would be forced into a position because of using violence if we have to. Like any great idea or movement, there's always been violence. This does not mean we promote indiscriminate violence. We would promote, at some point, revolutionary violence simply because they're gradually pulling the noose around our neck. They're trying to cut off our free speech. Our ideas, for the most part, are not allowed on university campuses or school campuses. Yours is one of the few. I have been blackballed from every university campus in the country. They have even said that I could have I could come in and have a meeting, but I would have to pay $3,000 in security to have a room that held 30 people in it at a local university. We are the only time we're really accepted on television and radio is when someone else is running the show or there's someone from the other side arguing with us. We control no radio stations, no TV stations, and even when we would try to have public meetings, we in many cases would be attacked perhaps by the crowd or the special interests or the police themselves. We see free speech fading away in this country slowly but surely. And at the point where we're incapable of even simple literature distribution, then I would obviously advocate violence.
Now, when you said in these meetings or in these public speeches, you get attacked, what race usually attacks you?
Usually it's not so much a race. I've been in several riots where I've been trying to give a speech and I've been attacked, and mostly it comes from the extreme leftist groups it has in the past. Some of them have been Marxist in nature and or extreme integrationist and like that. It's there's usually not been that many like black people in the group that has attacked us in the past. It's special interest groups, sometimes maybe a group like the Jewish Defense League or someone like that. These people do not believe in free speech, except for them or who they believe should have free speech. We believe in everyone having free speech, including the people we're diametrically opposed to. And I think they do get all kinds of free speech. We have to almost fight for our free speech.
Mr. Metzger, you didn't mention this as much last year as you did this year with reference to the free speech thing. Has something happened recently that getting cracked down on with some of your distribution of literature?
Yes, not only have I applied to several universities here in Southern California to rent a room. The public is allowed to do that, to come in and have people come in privately at first, and then have a public gathering in a larger hall. And in each case, they have kept me out. I've applied several times this last year by using security and charging us extreme amounts of money to meet. On the other hand, recently, some young people who are university students passing out our kind of literature in a city, La Mesa, California, were arrested, jailed, and are now awaiting trial on distributing literature. So they're using ordinances and all kinds of little ways now of ticketing and harassing people putting out literature. And it's becoming quite PC. The difference is that when other people do the same thing, the police do not react against them. When we put out racial material, the police follow us, harass us, and even arrest us on trumped-up charges. And so it's coming down from the top that it's okay to go after us. And that's really very volatile because our people are trying to be peaceful. Our people are trying to put out ideas. But as they become forced more and more to the wall, they could very easily become violent.
What do you think of people like Adolf Hitler?
They did. Adolf Hitler was a very well-known and politician in Germany, and the leader of Germany. There were things that he did that I agreed with. There were things that he did that I didn't agree with. I believe the world leaders, and you can check your history, most of them were saying he was a great man during the 30s, the same as they did Benito Mussolini in Italy. Of course, after the war started, then a massive amount of propaganda sort of clouds the issue, and things get rougher. And so there's, I think that he was doing great things for Germany up until the war, but I think any time a leader pulls people into a war, it's really playing Russian roulette, and it can backfire, which that particular struggle did. So you have to judge all leaders in the world, either contemporary or historically, on a point system. They're not all bad, they're not all good. You just have to, and of course remember, the people who win the wars write all the history. So there's not too many historians that have the guts to come out and say, well, Hitler did some pretty good things, you know.
So does that mean you believe in genocide?
Genocide. No, I don't believe I believe in genocide. I believe in the natural right of a culture and a race of people to separate themselves from another race of people through simply moving them out of the territory. I think Germany had every right to, if they decided to exclude Jews, to do that, or exclude whoever they wanted to, if it was the popular thing in Germany to do. And I think if I was living in Mexico with a lot of other Euro-Americans, and the Mexican people decided by popular vote that they don't want any more Euro-Americans in Mexico, they would have every right to remove us from it. I don't think it needs to get to the point of genocide. If you're talking about the Jewish situation, number one, I always chide students to say, everybody seems to know how many Jews died in World War II, but none of them rarely know how many American soldiers died fighting to try to help those Jews. And I think that's one of our problems we have today, where we concentrate so much on those people, we don't think about all the people who died on our side and all the millions of people who died in Russia under communism and under communism in China and so forth. But and I always say this, 55 million people died in World War II, and if you don't want genocide, don't have war, because whenever there is war, genocide is not far behind, as we have seen in other areas, in Africa and Bosnia and so forth. So the very people who claim to be goody-two-shoes today were into the war profiteering and arms-making up to their ears. And remember, there are many big Jewish bankers who were involved in loaning money even to Nazi Germany. And so, like the United States today is one of the biggest arms exporter, but yet we keep calling for peace. Well, you can't give all these arms to people all over the world and expect them not to use them, and then say you're for peace. We're the biggest hypocrite nation in the world.
What's your feel on Native Americans?
Well, I don't accept the term necessarily Native Americans, because we don't know how many times population has turned over on this continent, and a little indication of that is the, I believe it was 9,000-year-old skeleton they found up in the area of, I think it was Oregon or Washington, who is Aryan or Caucasian, and has thrown the anthropologist for a loop. And of course we know the Vikings were as far west as Oklahoma and had built settlements and so forth, and they'd been mining in the Great Lakes regions for 1,000 years. I look at the so-called Native Americans as simply people who have immigrated a long, long time ago, probably across the Aleutian chain from Asia. Their origins are Asian, and they were all over North America, and they lost an immigration battle like we're losing an immigration battle with their predecessors, who are becoming more and more Indian type coming into California. So maybe the Indians are getting revenge.
Why do you care?
Why do I care? I care because I believe in evolutionary and separate development of races and the intelligence of nature that has, through this separate development, has caused the races to develop in a way that in some ways has been very positive, other ways hasn't been so positive. And I believe the very finest evolution of subspecies of man, the white race, has been the white race. And it's exemplified in the fact that the white European race, even as a minority race in the world, is responsible for perhaps 90% of the creative ideas and art and science and so forth. And many of the other nations and other races are benefactors through our educational systems. And I think that deserves protection. If we can protect the whales and protect the snail darter and protect all these little animals and big animals, then how about the human animal, the white human animal?
But aren't we benefactors of the other percent of creative ideas that we give us?
Sometimes. There's some things, and I have no problem with sharing certain ideas with other races and cultures on a separatist footing. I would not share secrets of armaments and things like that. You see, what we've done today is that we have allowed our industrial might to be shipped all over the world, and the fact that during the wars in the past we've had this industrial might here that could not be interfered with that much has kept us in pretty good shape. But if we were attacked now or in the future, we would be unable to get the products and the machinery we need, because they would be in lands, for the most part, that may be controlled by our enemies. So we would be totally unprepared to defend North America against any major enemy today.
If you were president, what would be the thing you'd want to accomplish?
Well,
just kill everybody and send them back home, or what would you do?
Yeah, if I were president, then of course you got to understand the president is way down the list as powerful people in this country. The economic interests of the country pretty much control the president, as we've seen in the investigations we're having now in Washington. But there could be a maverick president who could say, number one, we'll close the borders today, not only for immigration reasons, normal immigration and overpopulation, but for health reasons, that we have plague problems. People can get on a plane in India and fly here in a few hours, and they could have leprosy or anything and get a plague going here in this country. I would say that we can't talk out of two sides of our mouth. If we want to have a good environment, a clean environment, clean air and living space, and a space for our animal friends, then we can't keep pouring people into this country. We're overrunning our resources like all the other countries have already done. And so we must, in the 50s, we were told if we limited our population at that particular time, and it became static at that time, that America would proceed to be great and stay great. But then the white people said, okay, that sounds good, and so they did. And so our birth rate now, we're not even replacing ourselves. While at the same time, these treasonous people in Washington opened the floodgates of the third world and just let them all come in. And then, of course, the border has been a joke as far as border control between us and, say, Mexico. So, and then, of course, the abortion problem, where good, bad, or indifferent, we have eliminated 20-30 million people at least from our population that would have been the people that would be the doctors, lawyers, scientists, and so forth, and they never even got a chance to see the light of day. But then, at the same time, we brought in millions of people from alien races and cultures into our country. It's insanity. It's never... I don't think this has ever happened to a major culture in history. Perhaps Rome. I think Rome had one of the same problems. They became imperialist like the United States, and they started absorbing all these races and different cultures, and then they came into Rome, and pretty soon Rome fell.
Do you think it's all right that other minorities have abortions?
Absolutely. I think the state should sponsor it and pay for it.
Do you think they should sponsor it and pay for it?
Yes. I'm not a hypocrite. Our problem is we got too many so-called, well, not minorities, because we're almost the minority. There are too many non-white people having too many kids. And I would be less than truthful if I didn't say they should have abortion on demand, and the state should even sponsor it and pay for it. And they'd be much better off because of it, because... of these large families that keep them in economic bondage so much.
Don't you think it could be cheaper? Never mind. Forget.
Well, of course, we could have forced repatriation and deporting, but, of course, that takes the power to do that. And that is, in theory, what Abraham Lincoln and others wanted to do in this country, but the economic interest thwarted his ideas and plans for the repatriation of the black race out of this country, which he attempted by sending two or three ships into the Caribbean, but the blacks, ex-black slaves that they unloaded there were attacked by the indigenous people, and so he had to put them back on the ships and save them, bring them back to this country. So there's been a lot of good white men and leaders that didn't hate the other races, but believed in keeping the white race and these other races separate.
What do you think of the events leading up to an actual event of the Million Man March?
The Million Man March? Well, I think that's good for black people, and I admire them for putting that together. I think that what is sad is that white Americans don't do the same thing once in a while. When we have a big march like we recently had of all these white men going to Washington, they were doing it for religious fanaticism rather than for racial fanaticism. And they made sure right away to stick a whole bunch of non-white people out front so that they figured nobody could call them racist. And that doesn't do our race any good. In fact, who needs to go to Washington if you want to re-declare your loyalty to your wife and your kids and so forth? The way you do that is you do it yourself right there. You don't have to run off to Washington and make a big deal out of it.
What kind of separation would you like for the different races?
Obviously, here again, not being a hypocrite, I want as much possible territory as possible for white people. What's going to happen, unfortunately, is it looks like it's going to break into a civil war at some point, of which there's a book out now called Civil War II, written by a professional military man. It actually shows and tells how it's going to happen, when it's probably going to happen, and how it's going to come out. But the way it looks, the whites may be able to hang on to the central states and north of maybe California, up in, of course, combining with some of the people in Canada. and but major cities will probably still be black, somewhat black controlled. Atlanta will be the center of a black power move, and the blacks probably control the southeast. The mestizos will control much of the southwest, and so it's pretty well laid out and pretty much what I have predicted for a long time. All I can say is when the shooting starts, all this liberalism that white Americans pride themselves in will peel off like a, just a sunburn, because when it comes down to survival and taking care of your family and so forth, and between starving and eating, liberalism peels away real quick.
So if you want separatism, why don't you just move to where you are separate?
Well, name me some place where I can be totally separate, because the way that they're sending non-whites and allowing non-whites around the country and from other countries to move in, there's no place you can go. They've moved Southeast Asians in all over the country. There's thousands and thousands of Mexicans as far east as Georgia and all through the coast states. They're bringing massive numbers of Asians into Canada, and a lot of them, those people are coming south. You've got them in all the major cities in the Northwest and so forth. They've even established big black enclaves in little remote places, even in Idaho. So the plan of the big shots is to destroy any homogeneous racial territory that could give resistance to their plans for the New World Order by bringing so many different cultures and races in together that they can form no consensus on what to do. They'll just be confused and mill around, and then the big shots will have gained what they want, one worldwide slave plantation, and everybody is a slave, and you will serve the elite.
Don't you think that that is kind of ridiculous, thinking you're going to get total separation?
Well,
kind of fighting a no-win battle, kind of making a headache for yourself.
Well, Nature has a way of causing some things to happen that we have very little control over. And there's certain causes and effects that start things rolling, and something that, in fact, many of the things that you see and accept today as being normal 20 years were totally abnormal. And whether it has to do with race mixing or integration or homosexuals or what, anything that swings one way can just as easily, under the right conditions, swing back the other way. And as long as we're pretty materially satisfied in this country, people say, oh, what are you worrying about? It's going to be okay. Well, you must be crazy. But believe me, when the shelves at the local grocery store get empty and there's roving guerrilla bands running through the countryside, and the government loses its ability to control, things can change real fast.
Who do you feel are the leaders of this New World Order?
Well, you can pick up the Fortune 500 magazine and just keep track of who these people are. There's these multi-billionaires, the banking industry, the international banking industry, the stock market people, and then the corporations that they own. That's why the United States is no longer a sovereign nation. We're an imperialist economic nation. We are a capitalist freebooter on the loose, and when people simply do things to maximize profits, it destroys peoples, races, religions, and everything else in its way. And these people, once this is set in motion, it becomes almost a thing of itself, and it's pretty hard to stop without it collapsing.
Honestly speaking, what do you think of other races?
Well, I'm very proud of my race, and hope to be prouder yet in the future. I haven't been quite as proud here lately, but I believe that other races are evolutionary successes, or they wouldn't be here. So, number one, you got to give them that credit. Also, the Asian race is our greatest competitor, and it's always ended up that we've had major struggles in Europe to protect Europe from the Asian invasion, which has been invaded many times by the Asians. The black race is not a severe competitor, but in proximity through race mixing and so forth and simply crime in the cities, they're a problem. But as far as intellectually and creativity and scientific, they're not a real competitor. So it's really the Asian race and the white race that are at the top of the chain as far as I'm concerned.
Do you think it's wrong for, like, white and, say, blacks, for instance, to even befriend each other?
Oh, well, no, I know black people, and I know black people I consider friends. In a non-hypocritical way that we talk. We've even had lunch, we've discussed. I've appeared before many black groups and have no real hostility towards many black people or many other, you know, I went to Japan, I was a guest of various Japanese military people and police and so forth, and I gave lectures in Japan. And I don't feel I'm a threat. I don't hate them. I just believe in separation. And with separation, I can stand back and admire their race and their culture to a high degree and probably like to travel there and so forth. But I want to come home. I don't want to bring all of them with me.
Back to the Fortune 500 thing.
Yes.
What do you think it'd be like with Rothbard being president since he's kind of part of the Fortune 500,
he's
a billionaire.
Yeah, Ross Perot is a big, an interesting guy. He was on Larry King's show last night, and he says a lot of good things, but whenever a person who controls $9 billion tells me he's a man of the people, I have a problem with that.
How come?
Because I don't believe that's possible. I think that a person that controls or owns $9 billion has no more connection with the average person than the man of the moon. I think they can fake it. I think they can even lie to themselves that they believe it. But you see, Perot is a little bit of a hypocrite, too, because a massive amount of the money that he made was off the Cold War on special contracts to the U.S. government. So much of the money, if not all of his money, has come from being in bed with the very system that he's accusing all the time.
So, with his business being successful how it is, don't you think he could run the country successfully?
Well, there's no doubt that you need someone who has a business mind. It helps to be in politics and be in the government. But the problem is that always enters the picture is greed. And that greed can be probably just as much in a poor person as a rich person. But I think sometimes...
greed is in money-wise, right?
Pardon me?
The greed is in money?
Greed is in money, yes. Well, greed is in money and power and influence and so forth. It's possible that he could get in there and do something, because sometimes a person like that can become altruistic, but I'm very suspicious of them. I come from Indiana, but I sort of go along with the Missouri slogan, show me.
Would you consider your white Aryan organization a hate group?
Well, in the sense that we hate our enemies, the people who are trying to destroy our race, and we're friends and we love the people who are not. So sometimes that's across the racial lines, because many times there are black separatists that I get along with fine, and even Asian separatists and so forth. But then on the other hand, there are massive numbers of white people I consider my enemy, because they're doing everything they can to destroy their own race. So I probably would hate more white people than non-white people per capita.
What do your kids believe? Do they believe the same thing as you, or do you encourage them?
Well, it's sort of a mixed bag. Most of them have followed my path, Some have not bought the whole program. Some have even resisted. I had 6 children. But I think it's getting harder and harder. My last 2 are in high school right now, and 2 girls. And the problem today is the amount of propaganda and brainwashing that's going on throughout the books and the courses in the high schools, just assuming that this PC idea of race mixing and all this is the correct way to go. They're just saying this is it, and anything that is against this is just hateful and wrong. They will not allow me onto these campuses. Like I say, you have a rare situation there with a teacher who believes in real free speech. I don't even get to be a guest at the high school within a mile from me, and I've lived here 30 years.
What do you consider about gays and lesbians?
I think that it's simply tactical at a time when the white race is not even replacing itself. It's counterproductive for people to take themselves out of the gene pool and not be having children. White children. So, in that sense, I see gays and lesbians as traitors to the problem that we face, and that is a shrinking white population. Under conditions where we would have a surplus of people, you know, where we would be almost overrunning our resources, I wouldn't really care that much. I think the lifestyle stinks, but I'm not running around looking under every bed for one to persecute either.
Do you think it's selfish being a lesbian or gay?
Pardon me?
Do you think it's selfish being a lesbian or gay?
Yes. I think it's very selfish. I think it, I think number one, that my own opinion is 2/3 of it's just sort of a PC thing that people get into. I think some people may be born that way and so forth, but I think a lot of it's just a passing fad with a lot of these people. But I don't take the religious church position on it and say you're going to burn in hell and all that kind of stuff.
What's your stand on religion?
I think most religion is simply mythology. Whether it's Christianity, Islam, Judaism, what it is, I think some of the Asian religions are more probably practical. The Japanese, I'm trying to remember the name of the religion that was their military caste had, but it's similar to the Viking religions. I believe in ancestor reverence and hero worship and things like that, developing saints from the great people of your race and like that. But I don't buy this Middle Eastern nonsense because I can prove that it's all been inherited from religions of Egypt and Babylon before, and it's all built on mythology. But it's a $450 billion business in this country each year, religion. And that's why so many people get into it. They make lots of money.
What do you do?
I do. Well, I do my... I produce a, publish a newspaper. I produce a television show that's seen around at various places around the country. I get a tremendous amount of mail I have to answer.
Where's your source of income?
Well, we have people who subscribe to our newspaper from all over the world, and we have people who buy our videotapes, and we have hundreds of video and audio tapes from programs and things we've done. Then I also own an electronics business, television servicing and satellite business and like that, that I put part of my time into. But I don't have a large budget. And my opposition knows that. If I had Ross Perot's budget, I'd show them one thing or another. I'd be buying up TV stations so fast they wouldn't know what happened.
So with your war, yeah, you in it for the money?
No, because this is the last play thing you get into for the money. I mean, if you had any idea of what I've gone through in my family and been sued and lost my home. They took my business away from me. In the process, my wife died. We have paid with blood for everything that we've said and done, and we still do. And I have the intelligence and the know-how to make lots of money doing something else, but I feel that this is what I should do, and I've been at it this long, I'm going to stick with it.
So why don't you just live like an average person?
I do. Hey, I do all kinds. I do everything. I work out. I play sports. I sing karaoke. I play games. I go to the beach all the time. I bet I got do more of these kind of things than you do. I'm in Southern California. I can ski this afternoon, or I can be on the beach this afternoon.
But don't you have to watch your back with all these people that are attacking you?
I walk all over Southern California without a gun, without a bodyguard. I go to major gatherings. I go to fairs. I go all over. I walk the streets of my town every day. I've never been attacked.
Really? You never had any attempts against you?
I've only been attacked when I've been in an organized meeting where I was going to give a speech. But I do carry a knife, and I'm very good with it. And a lot of my opponents who threaten to kill me, I tell them, well, take a number and come on over.
So what do you think of gun control? Do you think it should be outlawed or what?
I think that the American people should have, obviously...
All Americans should have guns, but anybody else go back to their own country and get them?
I think everybody should be able to have a gun. And if you personally... commit a crime, then you pay for the crime. I don't believe in hate laws. I don't believe in any of these kind of laws. I'm sort of libertarian on this. There's too many laws. You should always punish individuals for their acts, not punish society as a whole. If people want to smoke, let them smoke. If they want to drink, let them drink. They want to have guns, let them have guns. If they destroy their own health, that's their responsibility. If they shoot themselves, that's their responsibility. We're living in a crazy country today where they... personal defense and personal ability to fight something out physically or even have a duel. I think that if someone does something to your family, if someone kills a member of your family or rapes your daughter, your sister or something, your wife, then you should have the natural right to punish them. And I think the government should stay out of it.
So doesn't that have to deal with military or something like that? Military people feel like they're part of a family, and they're over there fighting for their family, and their family is known as their country type thing?
They're not fighting for their family. They're fighting for the economic interests that run this country. They're being used as simply bully boys and sort of a police to ensure that the industrial people continue to make profits and the industrial people are able to continue to take the mine, the goodies out of these other countries. It's got nothing to do with the United States being attacked. I mean, when we go and kill 250,000 people in Iraq, there was no chance that Iraq's going to attack the United States. And there's no chance that hardly any country in the world is going to attack the United States. As far as I'm concerned, the only time our troops should march is when there's a threat of an attack on the United States. And that's the way our founding fathers believed, and that's the way I believe. We now have become imperialist and police of the world, and it's going to cause our downfall.
So you're saying as long as nothing's happening to us, we should stay out of everything, even though the whole world is in chaos?
I think we should set an example. I think that for many years, this country did set an example. We can't force people to do what we want them to do. They're going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to have the kind of government they're going to have. If they don't have the strength to overthrow bad government, then they're going to have to deserve it. But we cannot be some kind of a police force of the world, because we are hated now throughout the world because of it. You can't enter into any of these things. Look at the Middle East. Both sides hate us. We go in and we get our nose into everything. We're always screwing it up and even making it worse. Even the First World War we did. The First World War was almost ended, and we entered the war and prolonged it 2 years, which involved millions of people getting killed. We are not supposed to be that. This is not supposed to be an imperial nation.
I don't know what your style of thinking is, but I think the United States throughout the world is a respected country.
Well, I guess you haven't traveled too much. But I'll tell you what, you've traveled throughout the world, and you'll find that at least the system, the government of the United States, is hated very much throughout the world.
Is jealousy hate or what?
Well, that could be part of it, but I think it's primarily because we stick our nose in everybody's business, and then we try to buy them off by giving them foreign aid. And every father knows that if you have a child and you give them too much, you spoil them. And you give them so much that at some point, sometimes they even turn around and hate you, because you keep buying them off instead of showing them the right way to do things.
So do you think that's what happened to the race in the world? How, like, Indians, they're getting their reservations, the United States kind of buying them off, and now they're kind of in their own little world, and they hate all the other races?
Well, the Indians, the problem with the Indians was the United States had a schizophrenic position on the Indians. Part of it was to exterminate the Indians or drive them into Canada and Mexico. And then the other part was to save their souls and make Christians out of them. We've been saddled with this nutsy, fanatical, religious-type thinking for a long time, and it's sort of confused our national policy on things like the Indians. So, hell, the Indians didn't even know, they didn't know what we wanted. And but beyond that, the Indian people had the same problem. They didn't have a consensus. They were joyously killing each other and showing white people how to kill Indians if it was another tribe of Indians. And when Geronimo, the great warrior of the Indian Apache, was cornered, he only had 25 people. The rest of his race, meekly like sheep, went right onto the reservation. So, you know, there's weak people and strong people in every race of people.
Do you still have that webpage?
Yes, I do. www.resist.com. And anyone who wants to email me, they can email me at warmetzger@aol.com. And I'll answer any other questions you have.
That's your own personal email?
That's my personal, personal email, yes.
Okay, what about, does the war have a separate email or no?
No, I mean that if it's to someone else here, they get it that way, and most of my people have their own passwords. But if you want to get it to me, you just send it to warmetzger@aol.com.
All right.
So I guess some of the students seem to be wrapping up their questions.
Okay.
Do you have anything closing?
Well, I'm just going to say to the young people, only believe about half of what you hear, and unfortunately, only about half of what you hear at school, because the same people that treat you like little children today will throw a gun in your hand and tell you to go kill a bunch of Arabs tomorrow. So then you're a man, you know. When you're 17, you're a kid. When you're 18, you're a man. And we have a real schizophrenic, weird outlook on that. Even like when we call the guys in the military our boys, well, they're not boys, they're men. And I think I would be really telling people I would not really join up in any kind of military that's going to have to go out there and really do the blood and guts things, because you're just being used You're not fighting for the real interests of America, because these military operations are extremely expensive and they drive us more and more into debt trying to police the world, and you're not getting the profit from it. It's only the few people at the top are making all the money. And like General Smedley Butler, well, the famous Marine Corps general, once said, he wrote a book, War is a Racket. And they'll always give you these high-toned reasons why you're going to war, and it's all this morality and everything else, but underneath it's usually just to make money.
Who wrote that book, Civil War II?
Thomas, let's see, what was his name? Thomas, he's going to be on Tony Brown's Journal starting on the 25th on television with him, I think it was. Wait a minute here. Chittum, C-H-I-T-N-U-M, I believe it is, Thomas. And he's got a web page, Civil War II. You can find it through your search engine on the net. And also there's a group he told me about called Resistors, which is a group of Green Berets that are preparing for eventualities that they may have to enter into a struggle with the central government in this country. And you can reach Resistors also with your search engine on the internet. And you should do as much as you can to get a computer and get on the internet, because there's hundreds of racial groups on there, but beyond that, it's a tremendous place to get tremendous amounts of information on just about everything.
Mr. Smith, right now, school ended about 20 minutes ago, and
yes. Okay, well, it's sure good talking to you, and I can't say how much I respect you, because it's just, I'm telling you, the PC wave that's sweeping across this country is getting worse and worse, and I'm not speaking just of my ideas, but for many other people's ideas that are in a minority position, and for you to step out on a limb and do this each year is, I really respect you.
I appreciate that. All I'm trying to do is expose kids to possible truth.
That's exactly what that's what a teacher's supposed to do, right?
Good. If they put my feet to the fire, I'll call you in as a expert witness.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Probably give you a ring next couple of weeks or so just to follow up on some things.
All right.
Hey, thanks.
Good talking to you.
Bye.
Bye.